Hey everyone, it's Trey and welcome back to the Stingers and Dingers podcast. This week we got a lot of more kind of personal gossip as well as the President's Cup and then a little bit of actual golf news in terms of the Q School Finals for the Korn Ferry Tour as well as some club news as well. So hope you guys enjoy the show today, a little bit different. To start off, some news came out this week about Thorbjørn Olsen pleading not guilty to a sexual assault charge. Being drunk on an airplane. So about in July, I believe, July 29th, he was taking a flight from Memphis to London Heathrow, where allegedly he abused passengers, molested a woman, and urinated on in first class of the airplane. This is on a flight back from a tournament. He was in a plane with actually a couple of other pros. I think Ian Poulter was there as well. I don't think he had any comments. He might be a witness for this, so he might be brought into court. But you know, this is a huge, huge issue, and I believe that he took a reprimanding from the European Tour and I think was banned from some events. So this is kind of a big deal. I think one is that, assuming that these allegations are correct, which they seem to be, you know, confirmed by multiple people, the tour can't let that fly, so I'm glad that they, you know, threw kind of a suspension on him. It's wild to me that he claims not guilty. I think it's going to depend on what court he ends up going into, because he was on a flight. I don't know what the legal implications of that are. If he's going to be tried as in the UK, if he's going to be tried in the United States. Thorbjørn is, I don't believe he's a citizen of the UK. I believe he, yeah, I'm trying to figure out where he is. I think he's like from Sweden or Norway or somewhere in there. So I don't know if he'll be tried over there or how that works, but it'll be interesting to see nonetheless. His trial is on May 11th, 2020, which is the week of the PGA Championship this year. So look out for that coming down the pipe, but going to be an interesting case to see nonetheless. Next up, we have another big scandal piece. So Tommy Two Gloves Gainey, who gained popularity through The Big Break, which was that show on Golf Channel, which I miss, Bring Back Big Break 2020. He was arrested as part of a Florida prostitution sting. The sting was called Operation Santa's Naughty List. If you guys haven't seen the video and want to see the video, there is a, I think it's like a 60-second clip of him propositioning an undercover cop. And it is the most cringe thing I've probably seen in a long time. One, because I think any of those videos are cringe, but two, I think knowing the guy, this guy was on tour for a while, and he was in prominence, and was actually in Florida for the Korn Ferry Tour finals. So this all just kind of gets weirder and weirder over time. He's actually playing in the event right now. I think was in the top 40, so he was projected to get status earlier as of, I believe, yesterday. So I'll have to check at the end of the podcast here, but interesting nonetheless. He's called Two Gloves, for those of you who don't know, because he plays with two gloves, and he plays with gloves on both his left and his right hand, which is super interesting. I believe he putts with them on as well, if I remember correctly, so definitely interesting. But this is more like golf TMZ, I think, in terms of stuff. You know, I mean, you know, whatever you do in your private life, whatever you do, and but once you become, you know, part of public life in terms of like the tour or anything professional, this stuff kind of can get brought up, but if this wasn't Tommy Two Gloves, it was some random Joe, you probably wouldn't be hearing about it. All right, next up we have the launch of the Wilson 2020 launch pad irons, woods, and fairway woods. So Wilson just recently launched a new set of all the different irons and woods. These seem to be more focused on players that are trying to get rid of their slice. So if you take a look at the actual club itself, the launchpad driver, it's a 10.5, the one that I'm looking at right now. It says draw bias on the more towards the hosels on the heel side, and what this really means is that they're taking some weight that would normally be on the toe. I believe it's about 13 grams is what they're saying, and they're inputting it into the heel. The goal of that being to make the center of gravity more towards the heel, which would make the club more draw bias. One, from an impact perspective, but also I think if you've ever moved weights around in your clubs and moved it from toe to heel, it's much easier for you to just turn the club over, which for me is not something that I'm looking for, but I know for a lot of people that are coming into the sport and you know, looking to get rid of their slice, This could be a quick and easy fix. So not a bad idea for Wilson to go after it. It's interesting too, because I'm looking at the top line of the driver. It almost looks like it has like a hosel to it, like an iron hosel. Like you can almost like shank this driver, which is like kind of concerning. I mean, take a look at the pictures and see what you think. You know, I'm looking at the Golfworks a video right now, but you know, it's an interesting looking driver to say the least. You know, it's not something that I would play, but I think, you know, some higher handicaps, this could interest you if you're trying to get rid of that slice. Something also to note is that it is one of the largest, lightest drivers on the market, regardless of price point. It is 272 grams, which for most people, it's usually around 300 or above. So that should help increase your clubhead speed a little bit. So we'll see how that goes as well. Last piece is that the drivers will come with a Helium UST Mamiya shaft in it, one of their more popular offerings nowadays. Interesting to see that UST Mamiya is going to be the shaft of choice for Wilson and a lot of their woods, and just really their woods. Looking at the Launchpad 3 wood, looks pretty similar. Looks like they're going to be focusing more on the on that draw bias, you know, moving that weight into the hosel. So not many changes compared to the driver there. And then as well as the irons. The irons are more kind of like the hybrid irons. If you guys remember what were they called? The Mizuno kind of hybrid Hemicog irons, where they kind of got like progressively thicker as you went down the set. That's what I'm seeing, except it's more throughout the set. Like even the pitching wedge has a little bit more bounce and smooth camber to it. So definitely more forgiving and kind of made to help people, I think, get it up in the air who maybe don't have that swing speed, or maybe make that kind of impact position that you would need to drive that ball in the air and create spin. So definitely some non-players clubs, but I think an interesting club nonetheless. And then the last thing is the Launcher FY, which is the hybrid, their original hybrid. It is a recopy of the FY hybrid from 2007-2008. And it looks like it's going to be around somewhere between like 19 degrees and like 25 degrees, I think, is what their highest ones are looking like. So interesting nonetheless. I think I'm excited for Wilson to get back into the game. You know, they have come up with some really fantastic clubs lately. Their Staff Iron series looks incredible. I've actually thought about it in terms of getting a new set, because the cost is actually super reasonable compared to a lot of the other offerings on the market for blades right now. So keep an eye out for Wilson in the future. I think they're going to have something really great for you guys. All right, and then back, I guess, kind of we talked about UST Mamiya a little bit in the Wilson piece, but UST Mamiya came out with the Helium Black Shaft. So for those of you who don't know, the Helium shaft that they came out with originally was a mid-launch, mid-spin shaft. It looks like this one is supposed to be a little bit more of a higher launch shaft, so for those of you who are having trouble getting it in the air or trying to get a little more spin, get a little more distance off the tee, and are kind of knuckleballing it, this might be a good option for you. The shaft comes in a stock 46-inch. The weight varies by the shaft flex. So starts at 50 for ladies, and it goes up to 60 grams for extra stiff, with stiff being at 59 and regular being at 58. So should be good nonetheless. I think the good thing is with all of these shaft offerings is that you have a lot to choose from. You know, you have Graphite Design, you have UST Mamiya, you have Mitsubishi Rayon, you have Product X, you have all these different companies that are coming out with shafts. I think one thing is that I can't forget Fujikura, obviously. I think the one big thing is that I think more competition leads to better pricing for each individual. So I'm always open to new products that come out on the market just because of the competition reason. Hopefully, you know, seeing this come out for some of the golfers that need that help will, you know, drop the price of some of the other shafts that are big nowadays. Like I think the what's the new Mitsubishi shaft that's blue? I can't remember off the top of my head, but you know, there's a lot of like tailor-made products and stuff that have some of those stock ones in there, and if there can be another offering that brings that price down, all the better. So good job, UST Mamiya. All right. Okay, now this next section is going to be kind of a collaboration of President's Cup results as well as some of the things that happened during it. So I'm just going to start off by congratulating Team USA on that incredible comeback. I am American, so keep that in mind if you are from another country. So I'm going to be biased. You know, obviously I want the Americans to win as I am American. But nonetheless, I think there's a couple of things we learned from this week. I think one is that the Americans, I don't think, traveled well in the beginning of the week. looking at the doubles matches that they played, either it was four ball or alternate shot, it just looked like the internationals just really had the edge. I couldn't tell if it was, you know, people getting tired or just not feeling good or whatever it was, but it just seemed like the U.S. took a while to show up. Because if you look at, like, compared to the first day, looking at the last couple days, like, you know, on the third day when the U.S. took a couple of matches to bring it to two down instead of three, I think that was huge. And then being able on the last day to take the singles and match up with, you know, everyone individually. And everyone, I think, on the U.S. team played very solid. There was really no kind of big blowout. I think Gary Woodland lost by two. Or was it 3-2 or 2-1? I can't remember. But either way, I think that was the biggest loss the U.S. took yesterday. And there were even some instances where the U.S. team was up four, five, six shots in a round. I think Patrick Reed was up six in the first seven. Xander was up four in the first five. And it was just a really strong outing in the singles matches by the team. I think part of this was spurred on by, I think, Tiger leading by example, coming out against Abraham Anser, and then just I think he was just consistently one step ahead of Abraham Anser the entire match. That's not to say Abraham is not a great player. He is a fantastic player, and I think he's going to have a really bright future. But it's one of those things, man, where you're playing against Tiger Woods, who he probably idolized growing up his entire life, which is wild to think about. And then getting into that scenario, I think that has to come into play. But also, Tiger is just a phenomenal player. He played extremely well. That putt he made on, I think it was 16 to finish it. I mean, he freaking took his hat off before the putt was on the hole because he knew it was going in. Like, that's how on he was yesterday. You're not going to beat that. That's the hard part. So, you know, congrats to the U.S. team. I think next time around, I think what we need to do is, I think that if the team can get out there a week earlier and just even just get on local time, right? I think even those type of incremental changes will make huge differences. I know that people have different schedules and are going to be playing different tournaments during that time, but if I'm playing on the U.S. team or the international team, I want to get there a little bit earlier just to get on schedule and get on time and make sure that I'm ready to go for the tournament. All right, now to get into some of the other stories that came about this. So for those of you who don't know, Cam Smith, after the Patrick Reed issue at the Hero World Challenge, kind of talked a little bit of trash about Patrick Reed pre-President's Cup. So that was interesting. He basically said, I'm sure he didn't like it. I think there's a little tension there. I've looked at Patrick a couple times and he hasn't looked back. I'm looking forward to the weekend. And then, let's see. Speak to Reed this week about how their friendship has disintegrated over the dispute that began last weekend. And then Cam said, I definitely won't go out of my way. I think our friendship, I guess, is not quite there anymore. I'm here to do a job for Ernie, and that's all I'm focusing on. I think it's the case of the team versus team. What's right and what's wrong? I think Cam took a pretty hard stance. I think he was the one who was the most outspoken against Patrick Reed during the sand shoveling debacle at the Hero World Challenge. And I understand, right? I think it's disrespectful for Patrick to do that. And I think, you know, he has a reputation that, you know, I think was probably part of the problem here. But I don't necessarily know how I feel about this. I understand, like, you know, Patrick Reed cheated and all that. And I think it's one of those things where you should hold him to his expectations moving forward. Like, we already know what happened in the past. You know, let's hold him moving forward. That's not to say that I wouldn't keep an eye on Patrick Reed and make sure he doesn't do this again. But it was something that I would probably want to, I guess, watch him for and just see what his response was to it, right? Because if he gets caught again or does something stupid, that's one thing. But if he leans into it and just improves his, you know, quality of character moving forward, I think he deserves that second chance. But his actions should dictate that. So who really knows here? But this also kind of came to a head as well. On, I believe it was Saturday, Patrick Reed's caddy got in altercation with a fan. So let me read this real quick. This is an official statement to 4Play the podcast from Kessler Karain, Patrick Reed's caddy. In quotes, as a caddy, one of your jobs is to protect your player. And unlike several other sports, in golf, fans get pretty close to the athletes. We have been known for having fun with some banter, but but after hearing several fans in Australia for 3 days, some had taken it too far. I had had enough. And this gentleman was one of them. Riding in a cart, guy was about 3 feet from Patrick and said, "You effing suck." I got off the cart and shoved him, said a couple of things, probably a few expletives. Sounds like he probably went kind of blank and kind of raged out a little bit. Security came and I got back in the cart and left. I don't think there is one caddy I know that could blame me, unless his bones break like Mr. Glass. The most harm he did was spill a little bit of his beer. I'm more than happy to reimburse him for that beer. It did not end there, though. In terms of the response, PGA Tour did ban Patrick Reed's caddy from the rest of the event, and Reed stated, "I respect the Tour's decision. We are focused on winning the President's Cup tomorrow." Because of that, if you notice that Patrick Reed's caddy on Sunday was a little bit different, or Saturday was a little bit different, it was because it was his spin coach, Kevin Kirk, who was the one who ended up taking the bag for him. I think that's a positive for one thing. I think, like, he knows Patrick, so, you know, having him on the bag, I don't think it's going to be too much of a difference. But that's not his guy there, right? That's not his normal guy there. So that's a little bit interesting. It's so hard right now because this is just the third, fourth thing that's come up with Patrick in the last 2 weeks. I always want to say, like, give people the benefit of the doubt. But if you're the one that is, you know, this decentralized part of all of this drama, there's something to be said about that, right? You know, I think anyone who gets into trouble every once in a while, sometimes it's just, you know, bad place, bad time. But, you know, if you're consistently part of the issue 4, 5, 6, 7 times, there's clearly something here. And so that's a little bit challenging, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I wonder if the PGA Tour is going to come down on him for any of the events moving forward, or if this is just going to be a President's Cup thing. I think we'll have to wait and see for that. All right, that is the President's Cup finale summary there. And the last thing I have is that the Korn Ferry Tour finals are going on right now in Florida. They're playing at Orange County National Golf Center at two different courses. And there's a couple of interesting things from this. I think one is that what we heard last year from Tour finals is the course was too easy. And actually, maybe I should take a step back. For those of you who haven't aren't familiar with how Q School works, so there's three different stages of Q School. There's stage one, stage two, and final stage. You go from stage one to stage two, stage two to the final stage. When you get to final stage, that's where you can start to get exemptions into different Korn Ferry Tour events. So I believe it's the top 40 get status on tour, and I believe it's like 40 to 60 get partial status or something around that. So what this means a lot to a lot of players, and so people have a lot of opinions on Q School and how it should be run. This year and last year are, I think, no different. Last year, there was a lot of talk around the course being too easy and not being a course that they would see in play, and so the scores were kind of ridiculous. And this year doesn't seem to be any different. As I look at this leaderboard right now, round four has not teed off yet. And what we're seeing is, top 40 in ties would get status on tour. What I'm seeing right now is that after three rounds, 10 under par is top 40, which is insane. You know, if you say like two under par, which is like usually the cut line at a tour event, that's tied for 118. So I do think this is another scenario where the course is just too freaking easy. Looking at the courses themselves, Orange County National has two courses. Both of them are about 6,800 yards and 6,900 yards, respectively. And they don't look all that challenging, if I'm honest. Like, I don't think this is a good test for them. I think you need to be taking them to a longer course, something that's much more challenging, you know, to get these scores down and make it more of a fair event. You know, I think this is, you know, harping on the guys who are used to playing shorter courses and playing flip wedges into holes. That's not how the tour's played. You know, a lot of the tour events are around 7,100 yards. I think the course that was played out in Seattle in Georgia was one of the shortest on tour. It was 7,100 yards, but it was a par 70. It wasn't a par 72. If you extend out that hole another 100 yards per, you know, stroke, that's a 7,200 yards par 72 course. Both of these are 400 yards shorter. So I'm a little bit disappointed that the PGA Tour still puts these Q schools out on these small courses. I think part of it is they're trying to find places that can hold an event that large. You know, PGA Tour Q schools or Korn Ferry Tour Q school is not that small. In terms of the size of the event, there's 154 players, so you need two courses for that for sure. But, you know, there's plenty of courses out there that are more challenging that you can put 154 players on and have them play for those spots. So, you know, good luck to everyone out there, and you know, I hope everyone does well. But I, you know, hopefully PGA Tour, you get your stuff together and put them at a tougher course than this. I think they need that as an actual fair test of skills versus the number one player, you know, 3 days under being 17 under par. That's just absolutely ridiculous. But anyways, that is the episode for the week. If you like the episode, please leave us a review on iTunes. It means a lot to me. And check us out on our social media at Stingers and Dingers for most of it. There will be a link in the description for the Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook for the social media links as well. Hope you guys like this episode, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Peace.